News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 24th of June, Anno Domini 2007. And you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And in 9 minutes after the hour, we've got news, views, stuff you can use. We're going to have Uncle Dave's Story Hour. We're going to take your calls. It's going to be fun, until Daddy takes the T-Bird away. What?
You know, it's a good news, bad news.
Which well, do I get first?
Well, good news is, you know, we just got into summer.
Yeah.
Bad news is we're starting to lose daylight.
Yeah, we
you
are.
Know, each day, you know, that's the sad thing about, even though it's, you know, great to be summer, that day all of a sudden we start losing, what is it, 2 minutes a day?
Yeah.
I mean, I really love this new changing of the time in that because it's so bright in the morning and late at night, it's, you know, 9 o'clock, it's still light out.
Hey, I got to say, it's nice when I come in and do the morning show on WHAM to actually be able to see the sunlight and stuff when I'm up at stupid o'clock in the morning.
Coming down the stairs and everything else, it's bright out.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's nice. All right. Let's start with a little bit of news. Apple has patched the Safari web browser for a second time. Apple yesterday issued security updates to patch 4 vulnerabilities in Mac OS X. And the Safari beta, marking the second time in 8 days that the company's had to fix its newest browser, which runs both Mac and Windows XP and Vista machines. The 2007-006 update for Mac OS 10.3 Panther and 10.4 Tiger, and probably 10.5 Ocelot and 10.6 Pussycat and 10.7 Cheshire Cat.
10.5 is Leopard.
Fixed a pair of problems. I knew he would have to correct me and make it English. Fixes a pair of problems in Safari, which is the production quality versions bundled with the operating system, including a memory corruption vulnerability that could end with an attacker in control of the Mac. Visiting a maliciously crafted website may lead to an unexpected application termination or arbitrary code execution, Apple said in its alert. The second bug, and to Apple the less serious of the two, is a cross-site scripting flaw in Safari that could be used by phishing sites to steal usernames and passwords. Apple today also updated the Safari beta, which was first released June 11th, to version 3.0.2 for both Mac and Windows. Mac Safari 3.0.2 patches another XSS bug, cross-site scripting bug, while the Windows Edition fixes that, plus a separate vulnerability that could let an attacker disguise the browser's address bar, perhaps as part of a spoofed site meant to trick users into divulging confidential information, such as bank account passwords. For Mac users, 2007-006 and the Safari update are mutually exclusive. If a Mac user has installed Safari Beta 3, only the Safari update is offered. Users who haven't bothered to try out the beta will see only the standard OS X update. Windows users can update Safari to 3.0.2 by downloading the new version from Apple's site or by running the optional Apple Software Update utility. So if you're a Mac user or if you're using Safari Beta 3 on Windows, then you need to update because you are vulnerable to attack.
There have been a lot of, you know, questions and speculations running around the Mac websites and blogs about why Apple would bother competing against Internet Explorer and even Firefox, which is, you know, the number two browser on Windows.
Right.
You know, I guess number three is okay, maybe.
Yeah. Right, I suppose.
Yeah. Better than poking in the eye with a sharp stick.
One of the other interesting things that...
I've been poked in the eye with a sharp stick, and you're probably right.
Yeah.
One of the interesting speculations that does make a little more sense is that with the iPhone coming out next week and potentially millions of PC users buying the iPhone and running the Safari browser on the iPhone, that the consistency now between their desktop and their phone, which has always been one of Apple's hallmarks, is the consistency across applications, is going to make the internet experience even better for Windows users that have an iPhone. I turned on my
look
marketing
at Steve Askance with one eyebrow up.
But yeah, that was also one of the disappointments that came out of WWDC is that all the Apple developers,
the worldwide developers, right, conference worldwide for developer Apple conference, Apple people,
that the developers wanted to know if they'll be able to write iPhone programs. And basically the answer is no, and that upset a lot of people. And the way you get your stuff, your applications into the iPhone is to make web pages because of the Safari web browser. You have Web 2.0 and Ajax. PDF is there. We're not sure about Flash yet.
Right. But you're still kind of a second class citizen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But what that allows you to do is you can make a web-based application that will run on the iPhone and now also on Windows.
Yep.
So all the traditional Mac developers suddenly have a bigger market, hopefully, to work into.
Right. All right. Let's head to the phones. Our first caller is Mike from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Yes, I installed Vista and I'm trying to use Firefox, but Firefox stopped working.
What version of Firefox are you trying to run?
The newest version. I just downloaded the update.
0.04?
Yes.
What do you mean stopped working? What happens when you double-click on the icon?
It doesn't connect to the internet, but when you double-click on IE, it connects.
But it does come up, and it says it can't find anything.
Yes.
Do you have a firewall?
Yes, the Vista firewall is blocking the Firefox browser. You have to go into your Vista firewall and open the settings for Firefox to get to the internet. And that's another one of the gotchas on the Windows security. It's a really great security program because it doesn't let anything work.
Yeah,
right.
Can I turn off the Vista firewall because I use another one?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. In fact, you really shouldn't have two firewalls running simultaneously.
Yeah.
And then in your other firewall, Zone Alarm or whatever it is, you'll need to allow Firefox through that firewall.
It probably is.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, and Mina Francesco, and all of you at 15 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 19 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Well, you looked, I'm talking to Rob now, you looked very smug when you started that piece of music. Why?
I don't know.
Just felt like looking.
I just felt like you know, I'm running out of ideas for music. People should like email us ideas for bumper music.
All right, you heard him. Email us with music
That'd be
ideas.
Nick at Soundbites.
No, no.
Rob at Soundbites.org.
Yeah, Rob at Soundbites.org.
I still don't know what the name of our theme song is. I don't know what it is.
Soundbites open.
Soundbites open.
That's what it's called.
Here in this studio, it's Soundbites open. Microsoft has killed third-party Windows client project. Microsoft has forced independent developers to close down a project aimed at reviving a Windows client operating system codenamed Longhorn. Windows enthusiasts decided to pick up where Microsoft left off with Longhorn's development in October 2006. Longhorn was the name Microsoft had originally used for the client operating system that ultimately became Windows Vista. But the company switched development plans and names mid-project, though the company continued to use the Longhorn name for the next Windows Server release. This release has since been renamed officially to Windows Server 2008. The third-party community of independent developers called Longhorn Reloaded first began its project with a build called Windows 6.0.4074, which Microsoft released as its Windows Hardware Engineering Conference in 2004. Microsoft never said it actually abandoned the Longhorn client, and many predicted that when the Longhorn Reloaded project began, it likely would run afoul of Microsoft's legal department. According to a blog posting on the site maintained by Longhorn Reloaded developers, Microsoft sent a cease and desist letter to the project leaders asking them to shut it down shortly after the team posted the first release of the project online. It deeply saddens me that although Microsoft has known about this project for many months, they only issued us with this notice a few days after we started to distribute. I do think that's kind of low class. Let him go along, then cut him down.
Yeah.
That's too bad. Okay. Through its public relations firm, Microsoft said that although the company actively encourages and supports independent developers to take advantage of the features available in our platform to create their own applications and services, the Longhorn Reloaded project violated Windows end user licensing.
Didn't everybody start calling it Shorthorn when they took all the features out anyway?
Well, that's the thing. They took out so many of the features that had been included. I actually was excited at one point when it was when they were talking about having a database as the file system and a bunch of other things that I thought were very clever and very intelligent. And then one by one, they just ripped them all out, and all they ended up with were a few cutesy gooey things.
Big deal.
So, yeah, I was not that impressed. Our next caller, Tom in Fairport, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
Hi. I've been trying to load GIMP, G-I-M-P, for Windows.
Yeah.
on my XP in a home. And because I need to, be able to read PDF architectural files and transfer them to TIFF.
Sure.
Or to get takeoffs done, not changing any of the stuff. But, just because the subs need it in TIFF for their systems. And I was trying to load it, and then I find that it didn't work reading the PDF because it needed this ghost software, this ghost script.
Right, ghost script is the PostScript interpreter that allows PDFs to work.
Right. So it's a GPL ghost script. But when I go to download that, it's asking me to 32-bit or 64-bit Windows, and I couldn't remember how to check that.
Most likely, though, you're only running 32-bit.
That's what I was thinking.
If you right-click on my computer and select properties, it'll tell you there.
Well, it'll tell you if you're running 64-bit.
Doesn't tell you, you're running 32-bit. Yeah.
Okay, because I didn't see it listed, and so I was assuming. I didn't want to assume,
Right. In this case, you may.
This is a multi-million-dollar deal. I got to get to the subs,
Sure.
I got to convert the files over so that they can read them.
Sure.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Our pleasure.
Isn't the old, what's the axiom? A 32-bit shell on a 16-bit hack of an 8-bit operating system by a 2-bit company?
Right. There's a 4-bit something in there, but yeah that's,
you're close enough.
You're close enough. Our next caller is Bob from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Good morning. I have a laptop, 17-inch monitor, widescreen, ultra sharp. And I went out and I purchased a external monitor, 20-inch ultra-sharp widescreen. I connected it to my DVI connector in the back of the laptop. What I wasn't expecting
was the Spanish Inquisition. Sorry, go
ahead. Nobody expects
the Spanish Inquisition.
I couldn't help it. I'm sorry.
Yeah. What I wasn't expecting was that everything doesn't get transferred to the external monitor until after my laptop paints its desktop. Then once I see the desktop on the laptop, then everything gets transferred to the external monitor. And I was hoping that everything gets transferred to the external monitor right from the beginning, like when I enter my hard drive password, when I enter my Windows password, and then the desktop. I was hoping everything goes there first, but it doesn't. Now, is there something I can do to make that happen?
It almost sounds like you don't have enough video RAM to drive both monitors.
Yep.
Well, it certainly could be that. It could also be the fact that until the high-end video driver in Windows tells the external monitor to turn on, it's off. So the theory is if you go into your BIOS and somewhere, now depending on your BIOS, somewhere in the BIOS it will say, what's the boot-up monitor, the internal one, the external one, or both?
I can check that.
It's probably set to internal.
And that's got DVI on it? On the back
it's got analog and digital. Yeah.
So it's got a regular VGA?
Yes.
I'd try booting off the VGA. It might be a little less resources.
But you get a higher quality image off the DVI.
Yeah,
that's the trade-off.
But I mean, he's doing a trade-off. I mean, he's not going to be able to change the quality of.
Now, do you want to use this in spanning mode? To use both monitors at the same time?
No, just the external only.
Yeah, then what is that, F7 on the keyboard? We'll usually switch between internal, external, and both.
Yeah, but he wants to see it boot up on the external monitor, and it's not doing that. I think it's because the BIOS is saying use the internal monitor only, and then when the driver loads, it turns on the external monitor.
Tell it to check for both at the boot up.
Right, so check that in the BIOS, and you should be okay.
And try using the regular VGA. That might be, like Steve was saying, though, you give up a little, but I think the quality, what you're looking for, the fast response will be better with the straight VGA because...
Well, try the BIOS first, see what happens.
Yep.
Both. Okay, I'll check both, but thank you.
Sure.
Got a few projects to work with.
There you go, exactly. Exactly.
Keep them busy until next Sunday.
Yep. And that's the beautiful thing about computers. There are four of us sitting here. There were at least five different choices of what to do.
And probably others that we haven't even thought of.
Right, and exactly how and when to do it. And that's kind of nice. Have we got time for Paul from Henrietta? No, we do not.
No, he's just...
Paul, hang on the line. We'll get to you
like
after we
you
come
know,
back. Apparently,
back and up and down.
Oh, yeah, I see that we're kind of out of time now. I've been playing with my Linux box and getting external and internal video to work, and that's delving deeply into the mysteries of Xorg, and I've been having a lot of fun with that. I've now got my laptops, the external monitor now works. It was real simple. It was a one-line, actually two-line change. So that was kind of nice in Xorg. and I've got dual monitors at work, except that they're actually two separate monitors and not one big wide.
What size are those, though?
They're 19-inch. But they're work monitors. I didn't buy, work bought them. I would have bought 50s if I'd known.
Uh-huh.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, the mighty, magnificent, incredible Glenn Lamberts is in to bring you the news, the weather, the sports, all the things you really listen to Sound Bites for. And we're back on the other side. We'll be bringing you more of the stuff that we do. I think I mentioned all of them, but I didn't say that I'm Nick Francesco. It is 28 minutes after the hour, and you are, of course, listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe. And that, my friends, you all know it. It's Sound Bites. And you're listening to it on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 34
Let me
minutes,
out of here!
You know, I it's kind of like with this computer system, you can Google stuff. I Googled your name in here to see what there was, and there's the Nick Francesco theme. You've made it when you have your own theme. You know you've made it.
This is my theme?
It says Nick Francesco theme.
Off the internet?
No. In our computer system here at the station.
That's my theme.
That's your theme. It is all yours. Every time it's played, you're going to get royalties. Not really.
How much did you get so far?
No, it's really labeled Nick Francesco theme.
Wow. I have a theme.
You've made it. It's, you know.
You seen a Family Guy episode where he found the genie and got his own theme music, and he kept getting beaten up because he was walking down the road and the theme music on the bus. Oh, that's classic traveling music. So, oh, shut it off or I'm going to break every bone in your body. So then he wished he had no bones. Turned into a gelatinous blob.
I have a theme song. Play it again. It's a very heroic theme song.
Sounds like you're going to swoop in on a horse and rescue a damsel in distress.
It
sounds like
Superman. The hat and the whip. Apparently it is.
Yeah, we thought it was Superman.
No, it's apparently me.
It is I, Nick Francesco. Ready to read the news.
Oh, my God.
Turn it on and rip the knob off.
There you go.
To the radio.
That's very nice. Very classy.
That's more like him.
That's lovely.
You know, Joe LaMonaco did a voiceover for Family Guy, last year, I believe it was at this point. So in the computer system, he's got a whole bunch of Family Guy clips. Tons of Family Guy clips.
Oh, sure. I'm sure he does.
Oh, it's great.
So what is the latest Paris Hilton news, Nick?
Yeah. She's in, she's out, she's up, she's down, who cares? Responding to complaints from the search engine company Google and the concerns of competition regulators, Microsoft has agreed to modify its Windows Vista operating system. At issue was the program to search for files, emails, documents, or spreadsheets on a computer's hard drive. Google had complained to the U.S. Justice Department that the search tool built into Vista slowed down rival search programs, including the one offered by Google. It said that violated a competition settlement that Microsoft reached with the authorities in 2001. Microsoft will now build in an option to let users select whichever desktop search program they choose on personal computers running Windows. It will also give technical information to companies like Google so that their programs can run more smoothly with Vista.
That's hot.
That is hot. Let me translate that for you. Microsoft tried again and got slapped down again. All right, our next caller, Henry from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Henry. What's your question?
Yes, I recovered from a crash last week. I repaired the operating system, but I keep getting messages saying Windows Installer is trying to install something and it just hangs like that.
All right, when you
That's especially true with trying to open Microsoft Office applications.
All right, the thing that is when you crashed, did you also take yourself back up? Was it Service Pack 2 on that particular update?
And all the Service Packs for Office.
And you've done all the Service Pack updates?
Yes. The thing is, I've been trying to do the updates, actually, and then Internet Explorer comes back saying, every time I go to the Microsoft site, it says it encountered a problem and needs to close. And so I can't download or at least install the updates.
How did you recover from the crash?
Right.
I put my original CD in, the Windows CD, and I did the fix.
Oh, the repair?
Yeah.
To reinstall over
that
Windows?
May not have been enough, depending on how badly it's crashed. And yeah. It sounds like there's more corrupt files. You may need to actually erase Windows and install Windows from scratch.
Okay, that won't remove my data, though.
Yes, it will.
Yeah, it will. Oh,
that will. Well, so you should back up all your data first.
It depends on which erase option your specific disks have, whether it erases the whole drive or just erases Windows.
Well, here's a trick. If you can... You still there?
Hello? Yes.
Okay, here's a trick. If you can...
You keep dropping out. Hello?
Yeah, we're here. We're not dropping out. We're here.
It was like someone picked up a phone at your end and was dialing.
Here's what you got to do. If you can, within your Windows, there is a file and transfer settings program. If you can run it, say, this is the old machine, and let it save the information. In other words, it'll save your emails, your documents, your pictures, and all the settings. And it saves it to a file in a particular folder. You'll see it when it says where it's going to put it. Or you can create a folder called a temp and point it to there. Then you burn that temp folder to a DVD. And then you go ahead, set that aside, reinstall
or a CD
Windows.
Or a flash drive or whatever.
Well, it's pretty big
however
file.
Big it takes.
Depending on how big he is. But you reinstall Windows fresh, and then you put the CD in and restore it. It'll put back all your documents, all your emails, and all your bookmarks and all that stuff.
All right, we're going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Wright, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 40 minutes after the hour at Soundbites. It's 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. Steve, this story is just for you. Several hundred pornography sites are surprising unwitting users with a smorgasbord of exploits via MPAC, the already notorious hacker toolkit that launched massive attacks earlier this week from a network of more than 10,000 compromised domains. What?
Do you have a URL for me?
Yeah. Do you need one?
He just wants to verify it in his bookmarks.
Yeah, right. Trend Micro has spotted nearly 200 porn domains, mostly dealing in incestuous content that have either been hacked.
Incestuous content?
Yeah. Or are purposely redirecting users. It's either they steal content from each other or it's about incest. I don't know which. Or are purposely redirecting users to servers hosting MPAC, a professional Russian-made collection of exploits that comes complete with a management console. Even though there are far fewer porn sites in this newly discovered infection chain than in Monday's Italian job attack, which was called that because it was like 10,000 or more hijacked sites. They were all legitimate Italian domains. They've managed to infect twice as many end users' PCs. Twice as many people watch porn as are in Italy. Is the answer to that one. Other researchers have continued to dig into the MPAC-based attacks and shared some of their findings. So if you're wandering around the internet, be very careful where you go. Make sure your antivirus is up to date. And check for spyware often. Here we go. The Stripper. Very nice. Henry Mancini. Very nice piece of music. All right. Did that make you happy? Are you good now?
You were talking about whatever. I was trying to make it appropriate with the topic.
I did. I liked it. No, it worked for me.
Yeah. And put the poll away. Seriously. We got a show to do.
Oh, now you tell me.
Have you heard the latest thing in home exercise equipment?
No, but you're about to tell me.
No, stripper poles. It's
Oh, that's old. I've had mine for 20 years. What?
Yeah. we've seen all the, what's that Latin one they're doing now? The Latin dance, as an exercise. And now there's this whole, they're like, Tupperware parties. Women go around with stripper poles and teaching women how to exercise.
Do they need videographers?
Pole. Yeah.
Steve, you need some help.
I could show, I saw it on like E or something.
Or something. I don't know what
Too
it was.
Too much free time.
I saw it on something. Sure I did. That's a lovely thought. I want to talk for a minute about a cool product. I want to talk for a minute about a cool product that I just got. It's called Animusic, and it's computer animated music. They've got two CDs out, Animusic 1 and 2. And what they are is they've taken a bunch of songs that are very kind of jazzy, kind of new age kind of songs, very upbeat, very nice songs. And they've actually created 3D computer animation to go along with them. Very trippy stuff. Very, like, I'm thinking 60s stuff myself. But it's pretty neat stuff, and you should check it out. It's Animusic, and it's at animusic.com. I've played with the CD. It's so neat to, you know, you think to, I thought to myself, I'm just going to put this on in the background and listen to the music. And I find myself watching the, what the heck are you doing? I found myself watching the TV. You should check it out. It's a pretty cool thing. That's my review.
I found it. It was on the Today Show. They had a video segment on it.
On and music?
No, on stripper poles. Housewives and stripper poles.
All right, we're going to take a break. Mostly while we hose off Steve and his Mac. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you at 49 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
At 53 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. All right, kiddies. Time to put your toys away, get on your footy jammies, grab a cup of hot cocoa, sit in a semicircle in Indian style around the rocking chair. If we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave! Wake up, Uncle Dave.
Man, I'm so excited.
Clear! Uncle
yeah,
Dave?
Really? Oh, today's, you know, we've said this for a long time. Whether, you know, you're doing it from, say, a 100-story building or from just a desktop. The fall will never kill you.
That's true.
I mean, all the way down, you can hear people yelling and screaming. It's till they hit the sudden impact with the ground that it does the device in or the person.
Right.
Same with laptops, folks.
You got the truth.
A fall, and you sit there and qualify it with, oh, it just hit the ground a little bit.
Hit the ground a little bit.
A little bit is even too much for a laptop that, you know, it's like the 60s. You remember the screens, and they'd sit there, and you'd see all these weird patterns and designs and colors.
Sometimes you didn't need a screen.
Yeah, that's true. But I wasn't going to go there.
Is that like a little bit pregnant? Or
yeah. Right. You go to turn up, you turn on the laptop, and it's doing all these, you know, weird colors and designs and everything else. Sorry, folks, even with all my great magic, that little bit of a fall, I can't do much with either. And then they get horrified when I tell them, yeah, a new display is going to cost you anywhere from $300 to $500.
Yeah, it's usually a half to two-thirds of the cost of the computer is just the display.
Right.
And here's the thing. Yeah, you know, it's an older machine. What happens too often in older machines, trying to get older parts, they usually charge more for them because they know there's a demand for it. And if you want to still keep that going, so you're going to have to pay the higher price. So, yes, it might be more than you originally paid for it. Or like this one individual, I told him the screen, it was going to be close to $500. Well, I only paid $900 for it, you know, about 4 years ago. It's hardly worth it. Well, it's worth it if you want to keep the machine up and running.
Well, as a laptop, we often tell our customers, hang a monitor on it. It's now a desktop.
Well, then, right.
Or it's transportable. You put a monitor at the other end, and you just carry it between monitors.
Right. Yeah, well, that's why I tried to tell them. They said, well, it's not very convenient for going to the car. Well, then. Yeah.
And the price of convenience is $500.
Right.
But here's. Yeah,
you dropped it. You have to deal with that.
Here's the other key thing, though. And this is what I'm leading into, you know, these drops and everything else. These folks say the laptops, because everybody is getting more and more into laptops, how they're so important and vital to their day-to-day work. All I can say is step back, folks, take a little time, and use a little more due diligence in properly shutting it down, unplugging it, or doing whatever, a little more care in handling this machine, because if you're going to depend on it to do your day-to-day work, you can't beat on it and expect it to still perform the way you want it to.
Yeah, we're seeing laptops have gotten more and more powerful, especially now with the dual-core chips out, that a lot of people are getting them instead of desktops. It usually was your desktop is the real powerhouse, and you had to have a laptop for portability. But then, you know, unless you're going to get like the Panasonic Toughbook.
Yeah,
the top. Yeah, that is mil-spec, and you can drop it.
But still, no. I mean,
but still, you drop it on a pointy object and it breaks the screen. Well, it's still going to break the screen.
And I've been also getting folks, they quick grab it, forgetting that it's still plugged in.
Yep.
And the little power connector gets ripped out. And then they get upset when I tell them, yeah, it's going to take close to 4 to 5 hours just to take the laptop apart. Because to fix that little power connector, I literally have to take the whole laptop, and we set out a piece of white paper with all the hundreds of little screws.
In different sizes.
Yes. Because you literally have to take that laptop motherboard out of the laptop, flip it over, and unsolder the old connector. And this takes a lot of time and effort. So use a little more care.
Apple has gone to the magnetic connector, so it unplugs itself.
That's a good idea.
All right. It's time to put Uncle Dave away, get his meds ready, hang up your footy jammies, wash out your cocoa mugs. It's time for us to go to Glenn Lambert. So we'll wake us all up with the news, the sports, the weather, all the important things. It's not time yet for Glenn? Okay, then.
Just Rob has a blank look on his face.
We should be done here, then. All right, we'll just be done with Uncle Dave. We'll put Uncle Dave away.
We got to put Uncle Dave away, and then you can talk for a few more minutes until I start the other music.
All right, I'll do that.
We got to put Uncle Dave's IV back in.
I'll do that. We've got Uncle Dave.
I can start the news right now if you want.
Now we started the new music.
See, now here's it. All right.
That was never a couple of minutes just
then. We are professionals.
Uh-huh. It's this whole time thing. I don't do time, man. I'm a child of the 60s. Oh. Dig that.
Go with the flow.
Exactly. Was that just hours just now? That was so cool.
You're for peace and happiness.
Well, I'm for peace, love, and rock and roll, and I'm not that fond of rock and roll, frankly.
And
but
never exhaled.
Yeah, right.
The problem with that is?
Yes, I did, but I never exhaled. But all right, we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Chris Reich, with Rob Linton, with me, Nick Francesco. It's 59 minutes after the hour. It's time for the mellifluous tones of the mighty Glenn Lambert to bring you the news, the weather, the sports, all the stuff you really listen to Wham for. We'll be back on the other side with Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
Watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest running computer show, Sound Bites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000 Watt 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, it's the Sensitive Soundbite.
Glenn loves that. That's my only part to the show. I just say my name once. And I'm done.
I stand here and watch for him to do it.
But yet I'll be at the jazz festival and hear somebody scream my name like Nick from around the corner down the block.
Ladies and gentlemen. We are so sensitive here on set. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes, from Father of the Bride?
But it's originally a Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Oh, was it
the
really?
The Genie in the Lamp, voiced by Jim Backus. He was sensitive.
Sensitive.
Right, and Bugs Bunny kept insulting him. Please, I'm sensitive.
I'm sensitive. Is that a slam on French people?
I hope so. I hope so.
Yeah, right.
I have no idea.
That slipped out. I saw you. You said, I hope so. I didn't. I said,
I hope not. I hope something like that would never happen. That's what I started to say.
Oh,
I hope
right.
something like that would never happen.
Because we don't want to tread on anyone who's sensitive.
We don't want to. That's right. If you're sensitive, I have heard on your general direction. Okay. Every week on Soundbites, we do a poll. Last week's poll was about the new Kodak low light digital product. And the question was, you feel the need for a Kodak low light digital project. 244 of you responded, making it number 252 on the all time hit list. Thank you. The overwhelming majority of you, 46, well, it's not overwhelming. It's just only 46% of you said maybe, depending on price. 32% of you couldn't care. 12% of you absolutely want it. 6% of you said the Linux, and 10 of you said the Macintosh. This week's poll. I don't think I'm going to leave it up quite that long. This week's poll is about high-definition DVD formats. In the war between the two high-definition contenders for the venerable DVD crown, well, you know what? It might be over. An announcement on Monday from Blockbuster, a movie rental giant, led some to declare a victor next month when Blockbuster expands its high-definition movie offerings from 250 stores to 1,450 stores across America. It will stock only the Blu-ray format from a camp led by Sony. Titles on the rival HD DVD format developed by the Toshiba Alliance will still be available at Blockbuster's originally 250 locations, as well as online. It was the last piece of bad news for Toshiba, which last week slashed its sales target from HD DVD players following disappointing results in America. You can't blame Blockbusters. Its customers were opting for Blu-ray titles 70% of the time. For that, Sony should be applauded for aligning itself so carefully with Hollywood. Four studios, Sydney, Disney, Liongate, and Fox, as well as Sony itself, use Blu-ray discs exclusively. Paramount and Warner support both formats, while Universal is the only big studio to release titles solely on HD DVD. The surge in Blu-ray rentals at Blockbuster was predictable, giving such recent box office hits as Casino Royale, Spider-Man, and Pirates of the Caribbean, all of which came out only on Blu-ray. Is history repeating itself? The Blockbuster announcement is remarkably similar to what happened 20 years ago when rental video rental stores across America ceased stockpiling Betamax cassettes to target the more popular VHS version of the VCR or video cassette recorder. When first introduced, the Betamax VCR may have been technically superior to its VHS rival, but it was a dead-end design. By contrast, the VHS machine had a flexible concept that could be continually refined. Within a couple of years, Sony's Betamax technology had been trounced, and shortly thereafter, the machines were a collector's item. The unremarkable Philips Grundig Video 2000 had died an even earlier death. Meanwhile, Matsushita and its VHS partners went on to make a killing. Thus far, the story of VHS mirrors that of Blu-ray, but of course, that's where the similarity ends. The main difference is that in its day, the VCR was unique. Unlike the CD player, which was merely a better record player, the VCR replaced no other gadget around the home. The only video recorders at the time were huge Ampex reel-to-reel machines and used by television stations. So we'll see. We'll see where this all goes. I don't know, Blu-ray and HD DVD, I think they'll coexist for some time, you know?
Well, there's already combination players. LG and a couple of other companies have dual players, but they're $1,200 for the dual player.
They're $1,200 this year.
We've been expecting that HD would win because it's cheaper, but Blu-ray is a better quality. It's a higher capacity, which means better quality. And Sony has got bigger studios behind it. So that
well, I think that's the number one thing. And the second thing is that it's a higher capacity for people who want to use them for data.
Yeah. In fact, we had Steve Mizell from KMP Media at the CIDR meeting last week. And he was talking about they're coming out with the gold archival versions of both HD DVD and Blu-ray DVD discs for people that want to archive that stuff. And they're starting to show up in Wegmans, the discs. But he said they're working on a new disc format that uses it's not quite the Holocube that we've been hearing for 20 years, but it's a holographic DVD format that will store 300 gigabytes on a single 12-centimeter disc.
Wow.
So that, you know, blows away Blu-ray. You know, Blu-ray is 50 gigabytes in dual layer, 100 gigabytes on dual-sided, although most companies don't like the dual-sided discs because then you can't put your label on one side.
Right.
So they're stuck on dual layer. But, yeah, 300 gigabytes on a single 12-centimeter disc in the next year or so.
Nice.
So another format yet.
Right. Right at the moment, the choices in this week's poll, however, my preferred high-definition DVD format, the choices are, of course, HD DVD, Blu-ray, I'm still on the old DVD format, and Betamax all day long, baby. So far, we've got 70 people who have voted in the poll, and I'm still on the old DVD format is winning. Now, when you're done with that, you'll see a yellow box underneath. If you click in on Give Us Your Opinion, it takes you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
That's hot.
You aren't kidding. And you can now enter an entire opinion, not just click a single button. When you're done with that, please feel free to take a look around. I run AskNick.com for the newsletter and the forums and all the other interesting stuff that goes on there. It's a pretty cheap read for the deal, and you ought to take a look and seriously consider joining. When you're done with that, of course, then feel free to come back to Soundbites and join us in the forums there and all the other stuff. But in the meantime, we'll go back to the phones now. We have Jim from Ovid, or is it Ovid, New York? Which is it, Jim?
It's Ovid.
It's Ovid.
Ovid, yep.
I've been to Ovid many times.
Yeah, right in the middle of the Finger Lakes.
I've been through Ovid, I should say.
Yeah, right through it. If you blink, you're past it in a hurry.
It can't be right in the middle of the Finger Lakes, otherwise they would have named it Atlantis.
Well, yeah, I suppose that could be.
All right, what's your question?
I got a compact Presario. It's like a year and a half old. It's a 1.024 gig RAM, 250 hard drive. Ever since I went for the two-year upgrade to the Norton last fall.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, when I click on Outlook is my email medium, and whenever I click on that, I get this Microsoft Outlook error message. The add in C program spam, a lot of letters and slashes, could not be installed or loaded. This problem may be resolved by using Detect and Repair on the Help menu. Unable to load C program and a bunch of other things. You may be out of memory, out of system resources, or missing a .dll file. Now, if I click OK, I get this warning sound.
Yeah.
Standard Windows error VPN.
But then after I click it a couple times, the email box comes right up and everything seems to function okay.
Have you attempted to install an anti-spam program into Outlook Express?
No.
That's what I was thinking when spam was one of those numbers you were reading off. That there are anti-spam programs you can try installing. Outlook Express doesn't really work very well with any of them.
This is just Outlook. It's not Outlook Express.
Oh, okay. My next guess now is that it's been attacked by some sort of a Trojan that's trying to add a virus.
Is it Windows, maybe the Windows spam program. What was it called?
Windows Defender, was it?
Yeah, Windows Defender. You got that running?
Microsoft had their own anti-spam program
because
for a while.
Also, he said he upgraded Norton, and he may be
running
the suite.
That's why I'm wondering if one of those, plus some of the other stuff that he's got on there, they're fighting it, because Norton literally wants to take over your machine and do everything that sometimes Windows does a decent job, ironically. It can handle stuff, and it doesn't need Norton to get in there and try to double-check it. And that's why it's eating up so many resources. That's why you're getting the out-of-memory issue.
Okay, and also when I go to click on the Hoyle card games on there, I get an error message, too. You click on continue a few times, and it goes right to it.
And what's that error message?
Oh, let's see here.
Well, I don't really have time for you to go wandering around the internet looking for this stuff. Here's the problem. Without the actual error messages, it's hard to tell what the problem is. The error message actually usually tells you something. To say the error message says there's a problem in C:// doesn't actually help me. We need the actual error messages. But what it sounds like is, as Dave said and Steve said, two programs are probably conflicting. The Norton program, which tries to do everything, and something that came with your Windows system, or that you loaded separately at some other point.
Okay, now the thing about it being out of memory, when I get that message, when I go to defrag disk or disk cleanup.
No, it said several choices or out of memory. So out of memory was one of the choices of many.
And out of memory has nothing to do with your hard disk and defragging your hard disk. How much memory do you have in the computer?
Well, that says, when I get it, it says you need 15% for it to be efficient. You only have 12%.
That's disk space. How much memory do you have?
Oh, on the
in the machine,
in the
totally.
Computer itself.
How many sticks?
512K or megs. It's
1 gig, 1.024.
That's an odd number.
Yeah.
Well, it's the 1 gig RAM and the 250 hard drive.
Okay.
Well, 1 gig of RAM would be 1024, not 1.024.
There is no correlation between the amount of RAM you have and the amount of hard drive space you have. They are never added together. They are two separate numbers.
Right.
Usually, if you go into the control panel, click on System, down at the bottom there, it'll tell you how much memory is in your on your machine.
Sounds like if you think you have a gig of RAM, that's not the actual problem, and that's just the error message is saying that's sort of the last possibility. Maybe you're out of RAM.
Yeah, because on that screen, it'll tell you how much the speed, and the very last line is a comma, and then how much RAM.
All right, we got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 20 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
24 minutes after the hour.
Like this tune.
It's Soundbites. In an attempt to cut down on spam on its Windows Live Hotmail web email site, Microsoft is charging John Doe suits against two alleged spammers. The John Doe lawsuits were filed against unknown alleged spammers who have been sending large quantities of spam advertising, debt relief, and adult websites to Hotmail accounts. Microsoft alleges that a company doing business under the name Consumer Solutions Network sent, and I quote, misleading, deceptive, and unsolicited commercial emails advertising debt relief help to Windows Live Hotmail account holders, unquote. The spam contains subject lines such as Michelle, accounts over the limit, or Robert, payment not received, the suit alleges. Consumer Solutions Network operates several internet domains, including myfinancialsolutions.org, consumersolution.org, and financialsolutionsonline.org, according to Microsoft. Microsoft has also sued unnamed defendants for sending spam that promoted pornographic websites through Hotmail. These are the ones that Steve always clicks on. Microsoft claimed that those spammers not only flooded Hotmail accounts with unwanted messages, but also used Hotmail itself to send large volumes of spam. Many of the defendants' illegal email messages were sent using accounts obtained through false or fraudulent pretenses. Companies like Microsoft and AOL and Earthlink have launched a large number of these lawsuits in recent years. They serve a deterrent purpose, and they can also be a mechanism for investigation. You can issue subpoenas and dig around a little bit to find out what's going on. Microsoft's filed such loose lawsuits on an almost monthly basis over the past year. In fact, in April and May of this year, it filed similar lawsuits against several alleged stock spammers. So we'll see where that goes. But for those of you who are constantly complaining about the amount of spam you get in your mailboxes, yeah, there is a lot of it. There's a lot more for Hotmail people and for a lot of other people, but there's a lot of it out there.
And how much does it really deter, you know, one or two lawsuits a month against the hundreds, probably thousands, tens of thousands of people sending spam?
Well, they got Soloway last month, remember?
Right.
The guy who was sending approximately 70% of all spam.
I haven't seen my spam decrease any.
Well, you weren't. We did. I did significantly. Yeah. We keep track of it at the Saunders College, and we have a chart, a graph that we do, and it dropped significantly the day after he was shut down.
Wow.
Yeah, I was pretty impressed.
Has it climbed back up again?
It is climbing back up. Yes, yes. It's darn near where it was.
The number two guy now.
Right.
Speaking of which, I heard on the news, and I didn't know if you heard anything over there at the school, how they're coming into town and it's going to start nailing more folks for illegally downloading music.
Yeah, they do that every year. It actually kind of slackens off in the summer. Often because there aren't that many students around, but during the winter months, we get lawsuits, we get slapped with subpoenas, and the FBI comes in regularly, and it happens in every school.
It's no big deal anymore for you.
Yeah, they all try to keep it quiet, but it happens a lot, and they're arresting a lot of kids. Those kids leave school and are simply never back. They're thrown. We have a code of conduct, a computer code of conduct that you sign when you become a student at RIT. And one of the things it says is that you're not going to steal any music. And so when you do, you have violated the code of conduct, and that's grounds for dismissal.
Yeah, and they got to enforce it. I mean, you know, kids don't think, oh, it's just one song. Yeah, times how many?
Right.
I mean, you know, it's stealing.
Right. And as I keep telling people, the EMI catalog on iTunes.
I had a big argument with someone on this today, this past week.
Well, let me finish this.
Yeah.
The EMI catalog on iTunes is now DRM free, digital restriction management free, and at a higher rate. So when you buy a song, you can make a backup copy of it without any hassle or problem. And I keep telling people they should be buying that stuff to encourage more companies to do that. So go out and buy EMI music.
But the issue is, and this is what this customer erroneously thought, they remove the copy protection, so I can make as many copies as I want. And he was buying a spool of CDs because I'm going to copy this to 50 of my friends.
Yeah, that's just still
because,
illegal.
Right, just because they removed the restriction against copying doesn't mean it's still not illegal to copy.
Right, just because they made it possible to copy doesn't mean they made it legal to copy.
Right.
Exactly. You can make a backup for your own use or put it on a couple of different media for yourself, but that's all.
Sometimes, you know, it's just a hello, common sense.
Well, people don't like common sense when it gets in the way of them stealing stuff.
Well, use that matter between your ears.
Yeah, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
At 31 minutes after the hour, you are listening to Soundbites. Well, we've talked in the past a little bit about Silverlight and Microsoft's lighting it up again, the upcoming multimedia technology that Microsoft hopes will peel developers away from Adobe's Flash is being hailed at Remix 07. The company's Remix 07 event, held at company offices in Mountain View, California, was a slimmed-down replay of the larger Mix 07 conference held in Las Vegas in April. Featured were demonstrations of Silverlight benefits for internet browsers, leveraged with Microsoft Expression, and the Visual Studio tools. You got to say one thing for Microsoft, no matter what else you may or may not feel about them, you have to admit that they build developer tools like nobody else. They put them out there, they teach people to use them, they target them to their own technology, and they get thousands of people using their technology to write stuff.
You've said that for years, that the customers, of Microsoft are developers. Average folk aren't Microsoft's customers.
Right.
They don't care about the people buying the stuff at the end.
Right. Right. That's exactly right. Customer, what we think of as the customer, the person who buys Windows, is actually the product that Microsoft delivers to their developers. We are the product that Microsoft sells to its developers.
Yeah.
Yep. The core function that Silverlight delivers is rich media capabilities, including video and graphics. Microsoft's goal is to have Silverlight run on as many systems as possible, except probably Linux. Microsoft officials are bullish. That's bullish on Silverlight viewing. It is having higher quality than Adobe Flash and of great use to venture capital funded companies looking to provide a differentiated web experience. I think Silverlight gives you the richest possible way to watch video on the web, said Daniel Lewin, corporate vice president for strategic and emerging business development at Microsoft. This guy's got to have a business card the size of Cleveland. I think that's something that most people in the industry have acknowledged and are pretty excited about. Flash, however, is already installed on more than 700 million internet-connected desktops. That's 700 million internet-connected desktops. Silverlight is currently accessible through the beta release of Silverlight 1.0. which is focused on adding media like graphics to existing websites. It's due to be generally available later this summer with a release candidate due soon. It's supposed to be pretty nice, but I don't know that it gives you anything more than Flash or Ajax or any of that other stuff gives you. It's just another technology. Now, Microsoft will have a lot of the marketplace because of the number of developers they have and because they will push down Silverlight to your machine. But anybody who wants to write for the vast majority of users will not use Silverlight until it is available for the vast majority of users. It's like I tell people all the time. Well, you know, if I write my stuff for Microsoft Windows for the Internet Explorer browser, I hit 90% of the people on the net. Yes, that's true. But how long would you stay in business if you randomly turned away one out of every 10 people who entered your store? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. You can't come in.
Yeah, you're ignoring 10% of the
market. We're turning away all the blue-eyed people.
Yeah.
We're turning away all the redheaded people. Why? Because they're redheaded. And I don't think that's a good idea. Yep. When I write a website, I check that it runs in Firefox, Internet Explorer, Safari, and Opera.
Yeah, you gotta
check. I think at that point, and I like it to run well in Lynx so that the visually impaired people can see it.
Yep.
And I want it to be SEO qualified so that search engines can get to it and all that other stuff. And you want it to run all those things. If you really run a website, if you create a website using the Microsoft tools, it's guaranteed to run well on Microsoft browsers, but not anywhere else. And again, if all you care about is you and three of your friends, you know what? Knock yourself out. But if you're looking for a general audience, and particularly if you're looking to sell something, that's exactly right. You're going to miss the boat because you're turning away at a minimum 10% of the people who would be interested in coming to your site. Mm-hmm. And I think that's doing yourself a major disservice. So until Microsoft makes their products available for Windows and the Mac and Linux, I don't see that they're the thing that I will ever write in.
And a lot of times, even Windows or Microsoft's own browsers have a problem. We have a custom program we have to use that was written for IE6, won't work in IE7.
Right.
And a lot of developers are finding that, is that there's such a radical difference between IE6 and 7, they can't make one program to work in both.
Yep. We're seeing that a lot. We've got, it's pretty funny, we've got a program that when it was originally, that RIT bought, RIT as a whole bought, we originally told it only works in Internet Explorer 6. Won't work in anything else. You have to use Internet Explorer 6. I found that amazing because I'd been using it on Linux under Firefox perfectly well for about 3 months before I discovered I couldn't.
Well, and that's one of the other things that may skew that 90% of the market uses IE, because so pretty much all the other browsers can mimic IE in name, the user right. agent field. So I can log into a right. to a website using Safari saying, oh, yeah, I'm IE6 under Windows.
And I think the landscape is about to change. Have I told you guys about the EPC?
No.
EEEPC.
Which stands for?
It's EEEE, three times easy. And what that is, it's a 7-inch monitor, a little portable laptop, mm-hmm. half a gig of RAM, a little flash drive. You can put as many other flash drives in there as you want, you know, thumb drives. $200.
Oh, is this one of those ones that a computer for every
kid? Asus, yeah. No, same idea. It's okay. That's the OLPC, the one laptop per child. That's really going to third world countries. Yeah. This is available for anybody, and they're going to be selling them starting, I think, in September. $200 for this thing. There's a 10-inch version of the monitor. That's $300, and then you can add more RAM and blah, 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 and get it up to wherever you want to go. But if you take a look at the screenshots, it's a whole new interface. There's tabs across the top. Hmm. You know, internet, play, work. You go to the work tab and you see open office. Okay. So you can do word processing, spreadsheet, database, mm-hmm. graphics, presentation programs. You go to internet and you see mail and web and you just click those buttons.
Oh, cool.
You know, you go to play and you see games and that sort of thing. So what that lets you do is have a nice little machine that's not terribly expensive that your parents can run.
Can get on the internet.
Aunt Faye can get on the internet. Okay,
Aunt Corky.
Aunt Corky can get on the internet. Click the internet tab, click web, and you're there. Click the internet tab, click mail. That's where your internet comes from. And for people who are even vaguely savvy, you don't even have to use the open office stuff. You can use Google Docs and spreadsheets. Keep all your documents online, all your spreadsheets online, get at them from anywhere in the world with a little $200 box that you carry around. It does 802.11b and g. It also does wired internet, and it's got four USB ports, so you can hook everything else on it. It's got a keyboard. Yeah, it's got everything.
Pretty versatile.
I was kind of sad when the web TV died. You know, Microsoft bought it and killed it. Because a lot of especially older people, it's all they needed. You plug it into your TV, plug it into your phone, you got email and basic internet. That's a lot of what all people want. And paying $500 for even a cheap PC is way too much.
Yep. Whereas this thing, if it does indeed come out at a $200 price point, we'll see in September. It runs a version of Zandros Linux, but you don't care because you don't ever have to deal with it. It's just tabs across the top and,
you just go.
Here we go. And you go. And I think that's going to change the face of computing because now, you know, your parents are always saying, well, I can't see the pictures. I can't get to this. I can't do that. And I don't want to spend $1,000 for a machine that'll do it. Here it is. $200. I'm buying it for you, Dad. Knock yourself out. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. At 41 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Can hear Wham more easily at work. Listen to WHAM at wham1180.com.
We're going to do one more song, and then we're going to take a 10-minute break and then come back and play electric music and boogie.
This one's called, If You Can't Be With The One You Love the One You Wish.
Oh, and that's the story of this show. Welcome back, everybody. I love being with all these guys. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Wright.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
At 45 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites.
I had to hear the...
But which one of the guys is it?
I have no idea.
It's CSN, you know, CSN Sometimes Why, but who's actually singing there?
Anyway, we've been talking offline about the... EEEPC, and I want to go on a little bit more about this. You really need to take a look at this. Steve can post the link to the Hot Hardware Review, which has a link looking at it, all the pictures, the front, the back, the sides, the everything else. And at the bottom, there's another page, a link to a second page, where you can look at the software. And this is where you can see that there are tabs. There are two different modes. In one mode, it's just a regular Linux desktop, and you know, you have a start button and all the programs. But in the easy mode, there's six tabs: internet, work, learn, play, settings, and favorites. So if you just go to the internet link, you get web mail information, web storage, a messenger. Oh, did I mention this thing comes with a camera and a microphone? So there's a link to Skype and of course their own magazine and of course Wikipedia.
You know, hearing both of you guys going on and on about this, now tell me if I'm wrong.
You're wrong.
No, I don't think so.
I'm sorry. Keep going.
Not on this. All right. Stop and think about it, both of you guys. Over the past couple of years, as far as new stuff, here's something new that's coming out.
You know, there hasn't really been anything new.
Really new that we're hot to go for.
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember when software used to come out and say, oh, I can't wait to get that. I got to really get it. Try it and get it home and do it. As far as other hot products, I can't really think of PC World would always have their expo, or we'd be going to Comdex because we'd be looking forward to the latest and greatest releases of this or that, and we'd really want to try this particular product or that particular product. Really, in the past couple of years, either one of you guys think of anything that really came out?
Well, even this is really the only difference is the form, the presentation. The size of the form factor and the way the software is presented. And
it's a 7-inch screen. Most people want a 15-inch screen, but that's what makes it cost
and no.
More. Yeah.
Right.
But still no, unless we bring.
Now, the only thing I might say is the iPhone. I'm very excited about the iPhone because I've tried using the internet on a Q or a Palm or even BlackBerry, and just the screens are too small to deal with the internet. And so seeing how the Safari browser on that 3.5-inch screen and the really cool way you can pinch in and out, it shows you the whole page. You tap on it, it zooms right in on the article you want to read. Right. So that, I think, is going to be revolutionary.
Yeah, except that it's $9.99 or whatever it's going to be.
Well, it's nine. We're hearing these. That's an unconfirmed price. It's $9.99 with no contract. Right. It's going to be $500 in the 4 gig model and $600 in the 8 gig model, with the 2 year contract.
This is 200 or 300.
Right.
So,
but it's also a cell phone and everything else.
Right.
But, and a lot of people have been wondering about if I can buy the phone, not sign up for the plan and use Skype over the internet with the iPhone. And we're not sure you can do
see,
that
that's
yet.
Because no one's seen audiences. It.
Right.
That's for the,
bigger,
the much upper mobile yuppie kind of whatever they call them this week. This is for, you know what, Dad? We want to be able to let you chat with the baby while you're
in the
living wherever
approach.
You are. Right.
It's
right. Keep
kiss.
It simple, stupid.
Yeah.
Exactly right. And so you'll be able to set that up for your parent and say, when you want to talk to us, we'll call you or you call us. Just click the Skype outline and we'll see you. You'll see the baby.
Yeah, because I get so many folks coming in, they don't really want to know it, which we got to talk about after.
We'll talk about that when we come back. We're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 50 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
A faded sign at the side of the road that says 15 miles to the
Love Shack. All righty then. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton. And don't say all righty then. You were bopping out to that song. Don't lie.
I just, until he started singing, I don't know who that was, but whoever it was, he needs his pain meds.
It's the B-52s.
Yeah, it's the B-52s.
I understand that.
That's their one hit, right?
One hit wonders.
Yep.
All right, we were talking at the break about the new EPC. One of the things that I wanted to mention about it, I did mention, I think, that it's got the camera and the microphone, so you can do Skype, which means you can now buy one of these things for $200. It, by the way, has external video, so you can hook up a bigger monitor because your grandparents, your parents have bad eyes, so you're going to need a bigger monitor. Fine, you can hook up a bigger monitor. They can still call in on Skype and see pictures of the baby, and you can, you know, they can see their grandkids. The grandkids can see them. Hi, Grams. And everybody wants to talk to the grandkids. Well, guess what? The grandkids all do instant messaging. Well, Grandma will have instant messaging now. You can hook up a Palm Pilot to it, and you can project things out, and it just does so much nifty stuff. I'm just really, really impressed by this thing. It's you can hook printers to it, of course, and do all that other stuff. There's lots of things for kids like Tux Paint and those kind of things. So there's a bunch of stuff on here that I'm very impressed by. And I got to tell you, I honestly can't wait to get my hands on one. It's got antivirus built in. Because again, although it runs Linux, you want to be a good net citizen and make sure that you know, when you're doing stuff, you're not giving somebody else a virus of any sort. And so it does a little bit of everything. And I'm just, for $200, I mean, you know, even without adding more memory or any of the other things that, you know, you think you have to have, it does a lot.
Yep.
I'm just really impressed with it. All right, we've got time for, I think, one more call. Ted from Henrietta. Welcome, Ted. What's your question?
Thanks for taking the call, guys. I just was at work the other day and trying to boot up, and they were, of course, messing around with the server and hard drive again. But this thing popped up. I've never seen it before. Apparently, I should know what it's supposed to be. It says something like the PDF can't be found, and then it put another strange message. Do you know what in the world was going on? My stupidity.
What were you doing at the time this message popped up?
Well, I was trying to reboot, and I was playing around with it and just sort of like clicking around trying to get it to just reset and reboot. And,
well, what it sounds like is you tried to bring up a PDF file that doesn't exist.
What's that mean, PDF?
That's an Adobe
portable document.
Portable document format. It's an Adobe format that lets you create a file with all the graphics and fonts you want embedded in it and send it to other people, and they can see it even if they don't have those fonts.
Right, you see it a lot in manuals and and tech notes and you know, help guides you download.
So what's likely is you clicked on either something on the internet looking for a PDF file that no longer exists.
Or on this desktop.
Or on your desktop.
Or it's in the startup group.
But the point is that what it just means is it could not find an Adobe PDF formatted file, which is not necessarily good, but not necessarily bad. That's certainly not going to interfere with the way something works. At most, it will interfere with maybe getting a help message or whatever.
I think Adobe would be very saddened to hear that someone didn't know what a PDF was.
I think they would be, since they're doing their best to make PDFs at least ubiquitous. The EEPC has a PDF reader built in, so. That's nice. But in general, Ted, I don't believe this is in any way harmful to your machine. It just means there is some file somewhere that you cannot view, but it's only view. It's not going to change the workings of any of your programs.
It won't stop the machine from booting up either.
Right. So that's pretty much where that stands. And that brings up the point that there are a billion different extensions to program names. And it's so hard. We have an extensions.
Yeah. Usually if you Google it, the first couple of hits will point you to fileextent.org or whatever it is. It tells you what the extensions are.
Right.
But oftentimes just Googling .pdf and the search results will give you a good enough idea about what that is.
Right. All right. It looks to me like we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I know that a lot of people didn't because they were off at graduation. So let me just say congratulations to each and every high school student who graduated today. Good for you. Nicely done.
Congratulations.
God bless. Congratulations. Yeah, okay. You happy now? We're done. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I want to thank Chris Reich, who's been in here helping us get the podcast working at least to perfection, if not better. And, of course, the great Rob Linton, who keeps us as straight and narrow as it's possible for him to get. And us the same way. I'm Nick Francesco. This is Soundbites. Thanks for listening.